From theunts.com, this is the Unts Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunts.com. Hello and welcome to the Unts Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. This week on the program, my guest is Random Rab. A fixture at Burning Man, Rab Clinton played in everything from jazz combos to country acts to symphonies and death metal bands. His varied experience has culminated in a full orchestral sound that has earned him the moniker the Master of Emotion. Fusing psychedelia with his own colorful array of progressions and guest vocalists, Random Rab is carving out his own niche in the crowded Bay Area scene. He'll be joining Spangl for a slew of dates around the U.S. this summer. Let's get to the interview. Your background in music is terribly diverse. You've played the violin, the trumpet, the bass. You've been in jazz bands, orchestras, metal acts, country bands. What is it that drove you, and I imagine still drives you, to pick up such a wide variety of instruments and play a vast number of styles of music?
I guess I've always just had a really deep love for music itself and had gone through phases of using music as an identity when I was younger, but learned to just appreciate the sound of music outside of the kind of how we become egoically attached to certain styles of music. I've just been really fascinated with like the best of every kind of genre. Like, I'm not necessarily a country fan, but the best country songs are still great tracks. And, you know, same with, you know, metal. It's like, I'm not really into all metal, but when it's at its best, it's amazing. So I'm really fascinated with just like the trying to figure out all different types of music and morph them now into like one singular style that grabs a little bit of everything.
So were you classically trained in any instruments, or did you pick up instruments and just figure them out as you grew up?
I was, I guess, classically trained a little bit on violin and then a lot on trumpet. And I studied it in, you know, middle school, high school, some in college, and did a lot of the trumpet was kind of what got me into a lot of the different styles in the beginning, from jazz to classical to pet bands and whatnot, marching bands. And but I studied that for a while, but then when I got into college, I got tired of, you know, talking about dead white guys. There was no room for my metal band to be discussed in my theory courses, and I just felt like there was kind of a turn a blind eye to like what was really going on with music where I was studying. So I kind of bailed on studying music and just took it on my own.
So when you were playing in all these various acts, you actually began producing electronic music out of necessity. You had a need for a drummer, and since there was none, you had to fill the void with a drum machine?
Exactly. I was in a duo, and we wanted to be a band, and every drummer we kept working with, they'd last for like one gig, you know, and didn't work out. So we're like, well, let's just do it all ourselves. So we got, you know, drum machines and samplers, and started just kind of doing it as a way to enable us as a duo to play kind of the full band sound, what we were recording on our album. And yeah, so once we got the drum machine going, I realized the power of the beat and how amazing it sounds, the kick drum, and it was kind of all uphill or downhill from there, however you look at it.
Either one works. Did you have a specific sound you were shooting for when you first began producing? Did you look to any one artist and say, that's what I want to do? Or were you trying to create something unique from the get-go?
I was never really a big fan of electronic music in the very beginning. I kind of, you know, the rave scene stuff, I didn't really like it very much. I was more into kind of rock and roll. And I remember specifically hearing a Tangerine Dream track that had this arpeggiated thing that I'd never really heard before in that way. And that was kind of what first got me into kind of like trying to understand. I just felt the power of that particular sound. I feel like I draw most of my inspiration, though, for electronic music through other forms of music, whether it be Pink Floyd or Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan or just whatever, all different types of music. It's electronic. I consider electronic music more as a methodology rather than a style. And it's just kind of the approach that you use. But the type of music that ends up coming out can be completely anything. You know, I did a whole kind of country Western album thing that was, if you listen to it, it sounds like it was all made in some guy's garage, all acoustic, but it's actually all sequenced electronically, you know, sampling acoustic guitars, making them sound old, getting the voices to sound crackly. So you can really use, so anyone who would listen to that would think, oh, well, this must be some sort of, you know, old-timey album, but it's actually electronic.
And I wonder, as an instrumentalist who has come up playing with others, perhaps taking direction from others or playing their music. Is the sort of solitary process and creation of a DJ producer really the right place for you, or do you still sometimes maybe yearn for that collective energy of a group?
I think it's a little bit of both. If I have too much of one, I want the other. Mm-hmm. I do feel at the end of the day that being able to make all this music myself has given me the ability to create music that is free of ego. So all these instruments, you know, if you're playing with a band and you have a guitar player, he's going to want to play more than just one note throughout your whole song, you know, and so you really have to kind of give everybody equal time. You know, it's kind of what I've found. So with electronic music, you can have hundreds of different instruments and sounds, but none of them have an ego attached to them. So you can, you know, you're basically like the all-powerful conductor. So, but then if you get too caught up in that, it's nice to play with other people. And I've been definitely collaborating with more and more people in the last year to kind of keep the energy fresh, because otherwise I get into a little musical tunnel. I got derelict fate coming on strong, laying down the riddle, holding me down, whistling death, holding my breath. Here until the sun has burned my cheeks, we ain't got no time, so let yourself go. Circling life in the devil's floor, we ain't got no time, so let yourself go.
The Riddle from Random Rabs, the Elucidation of Sorrow, right here on the UNTS Podcast. You've been called the master of emotion. Why is it that your aim isn't just to make people dance, but maybe even make them feel wistful or nostalgic or giddy or even sad? Why don't you have this desire to just be the party guy? Why do you have to be so serious sometimes?
Well, it's funny. I guess I never really thought of myself being so serious, but I feel like that I had this revelation a while back when I realized that the power of music, and especially electronic music, the way it could make you feel was something that was really real. And I knew that I wanted to feel good. And I never really knew that before, because like I said previously, it's like I used music as an identity when I was in high school. It was like I was into the band that made me feel cool. And I realized that there's so much more that I want to feel. And really, I just want to feel, just tap into the deep sense of feeling really good. So the dance is a technique that can get people going. But once you still have to, dance can either be an aerobic exercise or it can be a completely intellectual and body, you know, life-changing experience as well. So that's what I'm shooting for, is just trying to give myself and others like a complete, you know, a complete package instead of just a little piece.
I imagine that revelation and a lot of your instinct when you're playing came from your years at Burning Man. I wonder how you got involved, because it appears to be where you not only have the most fun and create the biggest impact, but like you were talking about, it's been life-changing.
Yeah, I started going to Burning Man with a crew back in, 15 years ago. And right away, I knew that I wanted to make music there. And came back the next year and started playing. But I had been making darker music at that point, breaks and stuff. But I had been working on this new style of music. And I didn't really know when to play it. And so I was like, I'll just try Sunday Sunrise. And that first Sunday Sunrise I played, where I played this new music I had been working on, was really well received. And it felt like this whole new birth of myself. That's when I started making this music that I'm making now today. And I've been going back, every year. I've done 13 in a row Sunrises, 13 years in a row at Burning Man. And it's, every year it's pretty fantastic. And now it's more and more people come out. And I feel like it's been amazing to see people coming into that moment wanting their life to be changed and wanting their everything to change right then and there. And so we all come together and walk away from that experience totally different.
When you were in this darker phase, when you were just starting to compile maybe more upbeat or at least more hopeful music, was there any one thing that pushed you or influenced you, or was this a change from within?
I think it's just the feeling that the tracks that I had written, a lot of them seemed really thin, and they would only really be, they'd only satisfy me for a week or two, and then I would be over it. And I didn't have any longevity in my life. And they also were I got caught up in the whole genre game, you know, trying to figure out what's the coolest, you know, what are the cool kids listening to? What's the genre? How do I make that track? And really, you know, my ego was more important than the sound. I think that once I realized that making music to have greater longevity in my life and much more powerful music, and that was kind of the shift for me. And so now I'm trying to make music that really has deep meaning for me, and it's not just a sound.
Okay. So take me then through your live show. Do you have a pattern you like to follow, perhaps ease listeners in with something soothing, or do you like to kick up the intensity and let it fade away throughout the set, or is it sort of like your name suggests, just random, and you know, you have to take signs and figure it out on the fly?
I usually, it's all I consider each party is kind of like its own organism that has its own life. It has a birth and a death, and it's completely unique in every time. And so I try and feed off of what the person was playing before me and how that was received by the crowd. So if I have a guy on before me and he's playing dubstep and the crowd is really feeling it, I'm going to probably start off with kind of my most kind of heavier sounds to kind of get people and then ease them into a whole and take them on a journey that way. So I try to always figure out where the crowd's at when I start. And then I'm not there to mess with people. I'm there to like give them the best experience they can have. So I'm always just trying to stay flexible to see what people want. And because, you know, it's up to me. I've heard all these songs 1,000 times. I don't care which ones I play. You know, I'm not trying to force it on anyone. So if they want to hear one sound, I'm happy to play it for them.
That's interesting because living and working out of the Bay Area, you're at the epicenter of this big, brash, West Coast bass music scene that's just sweeping the nation. Is it difficult for you to not get caught up in that sound, or at least get tossed in with that crowd, or are you used to it at this point? How is that scene that's in flux all around you sort of affecting your own style and your own sound?
It's definitely affected my sound. It's very infectious, you know, to see these people just going absolutely bonkers over this type of music for years and years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's definitely seeped into what I'm doing. However, I try to always just do my own thing. And, you know, I think that at this point in San Francisco, at least, it's like I've kind of carved out my own niche. And, you know, after 7 or 8 hours of one type of music, it's I think it might be refreshing to hear it something different. So it actually, yeah. I think at the end of the day, it actually helps me stand out as opposed to getting kind of lost in this wash of kind of what the hip sound is today.
Yeah, you've grown out of that, finding what the cool kids are listening to.
Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I was all up in it for a while when I first moved here. I was just kind of fighting for my own and wanting to be accepted, but that didn't last too long. I knew that I just needed to do my own sound.
Kana from Random Rab's album Arose, right here on the UNS podcast. Let's talk about your own sound. Tell me about your forthcoming album, which I imagine will be out pretty soon.
Planning on getting it out this spring, yeah, if everything keeps working.
Yeah. Sonically, I wonder, how has your own style evolved from your early work and Elucidation of Sorrow through Arose and now to this, your latest album?
I would say that I'm getting more into composition, into a more kind of, I guess, orchestral and slightly cinematic sound, and really trying out a bunch of new feelings, still kind of with its heart and psychedelic music. I don't even know where I'm going with this album, but it's definitely got its own sound, a lot of down tempo and some vocals. I got some amazing guest artists on this one. So Tommy from Beats Antique playing drums on several tracks, and Katie Gray doing vocals. So it should be pretty interesting. I wish I had more to say about it. It's just a sound to me. So I'm interested to hear what other people think about it, and that'll help me define it.
So like you said, have you been trying to shut yourself off from other electronic music to maintain your originality, maybe letting some guests, Beats Antique, for instance, maybe sort of sneak up in there and influence your sound? You said you try and listen to other types of music to gain inspiration for actual production. Is there anything that you're listening to now that's maybe seeping in without you even knowing it?
I'm sure there is. I think that the biggest challenge is really filtering out all the feedback I've gotten from my previous music. And here I have these songs that I've played for years, and I get just constant feedback on like one track. Then you start, I think it's easy to get myopic and think that that is what my life is all about, is creating a song that sounds like that track that everybody loves so much. And so when I go into my studio, I often end up comparing my music to stuff I've already done. And I think that's the biggest challenge, is to kind of let go of expectations, to allow yourself to create a sound that really means something to you now, and not try to basically imitate yourself or others for that matter, but especially yourself.
At this point in your career, since you have gained a following, not only in the Bay Area, but across the nation, do you feel comfortable enough with exploring your own originality and maybe putting something out there that would be off the beaten path from stuff you've already established? Do you feel like you can, you know, push your audience more and make them catch up to you, I guess, is what I'm trying to say?
I think that people expect that from me. So I think that I have to do that. And, you know, I don't want to just keep recycling the same. I'm changing. We're all changing. So, yeah, I think that it's going to, it is a journey. You know, I think it's nice that all my albums are different enough that you can have a full spectrum experience by getting all the albums.
yeah, absolutely. So finally, let's talk about this upcoming U.S. tour with Spangl. Will you be adapting your sound in any way, or is it, this is the Random Rab sound, I'm going in there not thinking about, you know, opening up for this person or that person. This is exactly what I'm here to do, and take it or leave it.
I am a huge fan of Spangl, and I always have been. So this is a big honor to be able to go on the road with them. And also, one of the biggest, most awesome things about this is that I get to share my music with Spangl's fan base, which I think is ready for my music. And I do think that I will be playing a style of music that is more compatible. It's all my own music, you know, but I think that I'm just going to feel the crowds out, but I have a good feeling that it's going to work, and I'm not going to have to do too much to, you know, I don't think there's anything that's going to be marginalized, this audience that I do. So I feel pretty comfortable that if I can just get out there and have fun with these people, we're all going to have a great time.
There are going to be different people there. This may be, you know, more of a Spangl crowd. Do you feel like, since your music is so based in emotion and based on moving a crowd of people, do you think it's a challenge when you're going to be playing bigger theaters, bigger clubs, bigger venues in general? Do you think the intimacy of your music is anyway hampered by the fact that there are, you know, maybe a lot more people that are generally at your shows?
You know, I think that there is some truth to that. And I think it's the challenge that I'm up against now, is trying to figure out how to take, because honestly, like you said, the best times for me are with crews of people who are totally, you know, friends, and we're in a small venue and the sound system is sick, or, you know, there's just, that's like the best, is when you can get that really intimate, that flow. So sure. Playing for these bigger audiences can be really challenging. And I am trying to think about that when I'm writing a lot of my live set right now, as to how to capture a larger audience and keep the energy high. The success of my music isn't often based by looking out into the crowd and seeing how many people are fist pumping. It's more of an internal experience. So it can often, you know, you may look in the crowd and not know that everyone's totally feeling it, but they are, you know. So it's just, you just got to trust that's what's going on. It's working.
Well, we absolutely wish you the best of luck for this upcoming Spangl tour. We also are looking forward to the new album. Random Rab, thank you for being on the Uns podcast.
Thank you so much. It was really great to talk to you today.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's Uns podcast. Special thanks go to Megan Sabella with Coast to Coast Entertainment, as well as my guest, Rab Clinton. Random Rab will be joining Spangl on a huge 30-plus date summer tour across America. Stay tuned to the Uns for news on his forthcoming album. Remember to visit theunts.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. You can still win tickets to Iodo, Future Rock and Subsuara, Beats Antique, Wolfgang Gartner, and a ton of festivals like Summer Camp, Camp Barefoot, or Electric Forest Festival. Just click on contests. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on the Uns podcast, contact me at anand@theunts.com. That's ANAND at theunts.com. Catch you next week.